So I am here to talk about correlations between social capital and HIV risk factors. And it's actually part of a pilot study conducted by researchers at the Colorado School of Public Health, as well as our community partners, Motivational Educational Entertainment, or ME Productions in Philadelphia. And I'd actually like to acknowledge my co-authors listed here, including Mr. Terry Fortune, who is here today and who I've asked to present our conclusions to the group. So we actually think social capital is a really timely theme, considering the theme of social justice for this conference, really because it moves away from the paradigm of individual level of health behavior to really looking at individuals embedded in a network. So whether it's relationships with your friends or family or organizations, institutions, your community. First of all, I have nothing to disclose except that I'm nervous. All right, so my objectives for today are to describe social capital and how it has been measured, to consider how social capital has been applied in health research, to provide an example of correlations between social capital and HIV risk in our pilot study, and to specify strategies for how social capital can be integrated into HIV prevention programs. Social capital is a term coined by Robert Putnam, a political scientist, in his book Bowling Alone. He defines social capital as trust, reciprocity, and cooperation among members of a social network. And these variables often include community organizational life, involvement in public affairs, volunteerism, informal sociability, and social trust. And as I said, it's really looking at broadening those individual level characteristics to observations of human behavior by looking at the interaction between individuals, groups, and institutions. So, when measured at the individual level, social capital has been measured using 5 constructs. I'll describe each construct here, along with the items used to measure them. So the first, and actually the second, the first is adult support. So it's any adult important in their life, whether it's parents, guardians, grandparents, a coach, a religious leader. And then also the second construct is then relationships with their peers or friends, the people that they interact with at school or out in the community when they're hanging out. So all of these are measured on a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is not at all and 5 goes all the way up to completely. So 5 is a higher number and subsequently a better number for them to score. And it asks how often do either the adults or the friends first give you information on how to do things, talk with you about the things you're interested in, provide you with love and support, make it clear to you what they expect of you, and then lastly, also how much you ask advice from them. The third construct is constructive use of free time, again measured on a scale of 1 to 5, and it asks how often they volunteer, participate in non-sports activities, sports activities, any kind of arts like music, dance, theater, slam poetry, and then also religious services like a church service, Bible study, any kind of spiritual gathering. The fourth social capital construct is future aspirations, so really looking at how important it is for if they're in high school to complete school, then to go on to college, to stay out of trouble, to have a family, and then to have a good or a steady income. And the fifth construct is access to a supportive environment. There is a little bit of a debate about whether or not this construct should be used in social capital measures. But we argue for including it as it helps us understand a person's interaction with their social environment as well. And it also parallels the youth development assets literature. And so it's just asking about whether or not the home, neighborhood, school, workplace, and community are supportive environments. Although these are individual level measures, the bulk of the research on social capital has been done at the population level, exploring things like the amount of volunteerism in a community, for example, and a health outcome. This was at the core of Putnam's original work. He showed how diminishing involvement in bowling leagues was associated with fading social connectedness and subsequently with poor health outcomes at a population level. But overall, we really have seen a growing popularity of social capital as a key construct in public health. And in general, this is because social capital is positively associated with health indicators. So few studies have been done that have specifically examined the relationship between social capital and sexual risk behaviors. And those that have are limited to state-level exploratory and cross-sectional studies, and then also studies that have pretty small sample sizes that are ethnographic and qualitative in nature. And again, few studies have examined the influence of social capital on sexual risk at the individual level. Most of those that have been done were conducted outside of the United States and have shown very complex effects on risk behavior. So then, what does this all have to do with African Americans and African American adolescents? Young black males have higher proportions of sexual risk behaviors compared to other groups of young men. And knowing that this group is at elevated risk for HIV, there are still few HIV prevention interventions that are specifically designed for young African American men. So social capital, with its emphasis on support, civic engagement, and responsibility, could be promising. Now, given the need for relevant interventions focusing on African American adolescent males, we felt social capital could be a promising approach. So then, what's next? We need to have more creative ways to reach African American youth for HIV prevention, to have an understanding of how social capital and sexual risk-taking behavior may be associated, and we need more research on how to integrate social capital into HIV prevention programs. So I'm going to talk to you about a pilot study we did in partnership with Me Productions in Philadelphia to develop and implement the 411 for Safe Text. Now, this was a community academic partnership, and we enrolled 60 young black men ages 16 to 20. They were all recruited from community settings in Philadelphia, and it was actually to participate in our overarching program, which is a cell phone text messaging program promoting safer sex for HIV-STI prevention. Now, we wanted the cell phone text messaging program to focus not only on the individual level theoretical ideas of condom norms, positive attitudes towards condoms, or also outcome expectancies, and self-efficacy for condom use, but also to go beyond the individual level and create a program that could integrate concepts of social capital, youth assets, and culturally relevant topics. As part of the evaluation of the program, we needed to investigate the relationships between these extra individual constructs to see if they had any impact on our outcomes. So this is the focus of our presentation today. What is the relationship between social capital, these individual level variables, and HIV risk behavior outcomes? Now, in order to investigate this, we had completed cross-sectional correlational analyses of our baseline survey data that we collected from participants who enrolled in September of October to last year. All right. So we measured constructs known to influence individual level HIV risk behaviors listed here. They were measured with anywhere from 1 to 4 items for each construct, and they were also scaled from 1 to 5, where again, 1 was not at all, 5 was all the way to completely. So again, here the higher score is better. So for condom peer norms, which are perceptions that peers purchase, carry, and approve condom use, it actually had a highest score of 15, so we have our means reported here of all the 60 young men that we recruited for the study. Condom use norms, which is personal attitudes towards condom use, also had a highest possible score of 15. Condom intentions, which are just intending to use a condom the next time they had sex, was the highest possible score of 5. Condom attitudes, so positive things that will be an outcome of condom use, had a highest possible score of 10. And awareness and knowledge of HIV risk had a highest possible score of 20. So for our behavioral outcomes, we have just the proportionate baseline listed here, but I'll just point out a couple in here. So notice that we had a high number of participants who had multiple sex partners in the last 90 days, a high number who'd had one-night stands in the past year, and a low number who used condoms the last time they had sex. And also, just to point out for one of our analyses later, we had a low number who had same-gender sex partners in the study enrolled. All right. So we looked at associations between each of the 5 social capital constructs and our risk factors and behavioral outcomes. So to start, I'll go through each of the constructs and the results here, and we are only showing the statistically significant ones right now. So For adult support, our first construct, we saw a negative correlation between adult social support and coerced sex, as well as adult social support and monogamy. So the latter is actually a counterintuitive finding. For relationships with peers or friends, we saw no significant correlations between any of our risk factors or behavioral outcomes. Our third construct, constructive use of free time, we saw a positive association between constructive use of free time and condom peer norms, and a negative association between free time and condom attitudes. Again, the latter is a counterintuitive finding. For future aspirations, we associated this with condom use at last sex and condom attitudes. So, and note that these are both more of a trend as the confidence interval straddles 1.0. For access to supportive environment, we found a negative correlation with coerced sex, and then the latter two, the negative correlation between condom use the last time they had sex and same gender sexual partners, both of those are also counterintuitive findings. And for social capital overall, we found a positive association with condom peer norms and personal condom use norms overall with social total capital. Now, this is a summary of all the associations. We've put an asterisk by those that are counterintuitive. We have a question mark with the inverse relationship observed between supportive environment and same gender partners because this is difficult to interpret. It may suggest that those supportive environments include messages that more consistently condone heterosexuality. However, given the limitations that we face from these data, we may not see that play out with a more rigorous assessment. And this is actually just a good segue into consider our limitations. So again, these are from cross-sectional pilot data, 60 men only, and they were not randomized. Some of our associations are not in the direction we would expect, and just to note that they are just associations, they're not causal. And also, this is one of the first examples of using the social capital measure at the individual level, so it really needs to be validated with this population. So at this time, I'll ask Mr. Fortune to come up and present our conclusions to the group.
How do I use this? Just click?
Yeah.
Aaron did the hard part. I get to do the fun part and just kind of talk about conclusions. You know, there's a need to better understand how social capital operates at an individual level. You know, in reviewing earlier today the research, a couple of things came to mind, and I kept looking at the word social capital, and I'm like, what the heck does this really mean? And as someone who does health communications and social marketing, it's really social fabric. You know, it's really about what's impacting this person's life. You know, you can't look at, you know, HIV as the single line thing. I'm gonna go talk to this kid, this young person, about safe sex and what they should be doing, not doing. It's about what's going on in their lives. What are the things that are supporting in some cases or helping. You know, it's not surprising that free time was positive. Kids who are engaged, who are doing something, who are active, you know, are less likely to engage in safe sex, have multiple partners and all that. And the other thing I should have said and just reemphasize, when it was, when the young men that we recruited, and we said community level kids in Philadelphia, 16-20, you're talking about, for the most part, low income to, you know, primarily low-income kids. So you're talking about, you know, poor kids for the most part. So, you know, what does that look like? You're talking about a family household where you have a disproportionate of single-parent households, you know, tend to be less educated, tend to be, you know, less informed. So is it surprising that adults, you know, aren't necessarily a positive, you know, influence in terms of, you know, HIV and not necessarily when you start looking at what's really going on in a young person. So going to that whole, you know, it's important to understand how social capital operates. There are different things that are going on and impacting these young men's lives. It's so important in terms of really understanding those if you're talking about putting together, you know, programs and services. Show the tools can be used. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Investigation to effects of social capital on HIV risk behaviors is warranted. Could lead to improved understanding how to better integrate social capital in the future. I mean, to me, I think people in this room probably, if you've been doing work around HIV, you pretty much know, you know, what the risk factors are, what people are doing, and all that. how people are starting to understand that, other things besides, actual behavior playing a role. People are talking about social networks. They're talking about how many partners people have and why. It's all part of social capital, people are just starting to really talk about it more, and how can we influence that? That's what it's all about. And, those of you who probably have been doing a lot of work around HIV prevention and in this area, one of the things I've heard for a long, long time is people who have programs and they'll say, Thierry, my funding is for HIV prevention. I know, these kids aren't having the support home that they're supposed to have, but my funding doesn't support that. I know these kids are smoking a lot of marijuana and they may drink and it impacts HIV, their sexual behavior, but I can't do, drugs or alcohol prevention. My funding doesn't support that. That's why the importance of doing this type of research, more research, so that you can give, people who are doing programs and services the information they need to then turn around, go to all the funders and say, hey, look, I want to deal with the whole person. I can help this kid better if he has aspirations of going to college, because it's not happening in school, because my kids are dropping out at 50% to 75% rate. So if my kids don't believe that there's a future for them, after they get out of high school, but I can't do anything in that respect because the parents aren't in a position to do that. I can create a program that has a supportive environment, but you guys are only funding me to, have people come in and teach them that they should wear condoms and blah, blah, blah. It's much more than that, I know the time's probably up. So I'm gonna stop at that before I get going. Is this my stuff or your stuff?